Welcome to the Scariest Things podcast number 9, your gateway to the tropes and trends and evil and demons of the horror genre. Woo! Episode 9. Lucky number 9. Actually, all the episodes are lucky at this point.
Yep.
It's the fact that we're even doing this is lucky. The fact that we can carve out time for you, the listening audience, to listen to us blather on and on about horror movies is lucky for everyone. It's lucky for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's lucky for us because we get to go back and look at some old films. We get to then look at some new stuff, and we get to toil in the evil and fright and scary and ghoulishness of horror movies.
And if you haven't yet checked it out, we have our website has launched.
Yes, scariestthings.com, 1T.
1T, and in it we've got a bunch of reviews of current films, a few old films. We're also posting some of our favorite lists that we've talked about in the podcast. You can dig them, some of those, the Fearsome Four lists, and extended actually to top tens in many cases.
Yes, favorite horror films.
Yeah.
All sorts of favorites.
And we're also going to try and keep everybody up to date on what on the horror news that pops up every week. There's a few cool things that have been dropping lately. I think I will make mention of the Stephen King Castle Rock production that's coming up.
Yeah, that looks super cool.
And where they're going to do sort of a Stephen King universe, and where he's actually one of the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take your shows like Carrie and Cujo,
because
Shawshank Redemption.
Turns out Stephen King can write.
Yeah.
Turns out he knows how to string a sentence together.
So for things like that, you know, and also something to check out is our an early look that you can find the trailer for Hereditary, which looks to be a super scary new movie.
Super scary.
So, Mike, what are we talking about this
tonight? We are talking about an interesting topic because, you know, a couple weeks ago or a couple podcasts ago, it depends, like, everything's relative now in the time-space spectrum, but a couple podcasts ago, we talked about ghosts, and I know both of us had a hell of a time sort of both defining ghosts, coming up with ghost story movies, and then coming up with a solid list of ghost story movies, but then it ended up being one of our longest podcasts because it turned out we actually knew a lot about ghosts. And this one, I think, is going to be kind of similar, maybe.
This one's so broad that it was just trying to
get it
focus.
It was tough. So today we're talking about killers. That doesn't mean serial killers. That doesn't mean, or it could. It could mean serial killers. We just said killers, but killers specific to the horror genre. Mm-hmm. I think there's probably some stuff that slips in and out of the genre. There's probably some stuff on the edge. Mm-hmm. There's probably some stuff that's pretty marginal. Oh, I have one for sure. I have one that's going to blow your mind. Probably not. It's one I like, and that's about all it's worth. Sure. So, because killers, I think, is an interesting one, because I think, you know, killers don't necessarily take on a supernatural quality. I mean, some of them do. Mm-hmm. You know who you are out there, killers. Your Freddy Krueger's.
Your big threes.
Your Freddy Krueger's, your Jason Voorhees, your Leatherface, your Michael Myers. I mean, obviously they take on some supernatural qualities, but a lot of, you know, but you could easily go very quickly to Seven. You could go to Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Psycho.
You could go to Psycho. You could go. There's lots of like killer, you know, Ed Gein kind of ripoff type stuff. Rob Zombie's done that aplenty. Mm-hmm. I tried to, and I told Eric when we got into this, we were nervous and we were scared. We were scared because
I don't want to do it.
This is a scary pod. We're covering scary stuff. I said, you know, let's just let our minds wander, man. Like, let's just chill out.
So what was your criteria when you were sorting through this? Because I'll tell you my criteria.
Yeah,
so,
lay it on me.
So, you know, I think one of my temptations is like I could do Bruce the Shark from Jaws.
Sure.
He's a killer shark.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like in the spirit of discussing killers, I decided I was going to try and stick to human, or at least human-ish.
Sure.
And so I
That's avoided. Good. I avoided monsters.
Okay.
Because in one of our earlier podcasts, we covered monsters. Yeah. And I say, okay, so this time I'm going to to homicidal killers.
I kind of tried to stick with that too. I tried to. I was not successful because it is very. I mean, Wes Craven, Tobe Hooper. You know, these guys created the most iconic killers of all time, and there's no question about that. And in fact, if you you know, wander over to Instagram and take a look at, you know, what constitutes a killer in the public's mind, you're going to see repeated images of Jason Voorhees and Freddy Krueger over and over and over again,
I found what was really difficult for me, because I had a hard time justifying a horror movie if I couldn't name the killer.
Yeah.
And so there were a lot of the horror movies. Like, I couldn't do Black Christmas because I didn't remember the guy's name. It was like the guy from Black Christmas.
Billy.
Okay. So might be on Mike's list. Might be on Mike's list. We'll see. Or Happy Birthday to Me, Bloody Valentine. You know the name of the movie and you kind of remember the scene, or you know, Sleepaway Camp or The Burning. They're all, you know, there's tons of great slasher movies out there. But
Sleepaway Camp was awful close to meeting my top four fearsome foursome killers of all time, because the ending of Sleepaway Camp is so good.
Oh, that's, yeah, it's got one of the greatest.
Yeah,
it's so super goddamn twisty.
So goddamn freaky. Yeah. In fact, I was talking to...
Oh, you should have done it.
I was talking to a coworker of mine who... I came very late in the game to the Sleepaway Camp game. I think I was in my 40s. it was late in the game. I was talking to a coworker about it, who saw it when he was, I think, the ripe old age of 12 years old on a VHS cassette. And he was telling me... That film really stuck with him because he didn't even have the mental vocabulary to process what was happening. He saw it and he couldn't figure out what had happened. And that was just, that piece of it alone was terrifying, let alone the fact that this person had killed all these people in the preceding scenes in the film. So who's starting us off tonight?
Well,
I'll
start us off.
Do it.
Well, you sort of dropped a small clue.
One more criteria before you start.
Sure.
This is a big question.
Yeah.
I asked, you know, when we were talking zombies, I said, fast or slow. Now we're talking killers. Does the kill count matter?
I wanted to get more than two.
More than two. Okay.
Yeah, so I think. So
I did find a site online. If you Google killers, horror movie killers, you will see a kill count site. Mm-hmm. Alien, 201 kills. Jason Voorhees, 125. Michael Myers, 81. Wow. Kerry White, 76. Children of the Corn, 72. Predator, 57. The Blob, 51. It goes on and on and on.
That's great.
So you say...
I think you say
more than two, but kill count ultimately doesn't really matter.
Not for my list.
Okay.
I was going for entertainment value and the cleverness of the killer. So
I like it. I think I kind of followed that too. All right.
Because
number four.
Number four.
In the fearsome.
Foursome. My number four... I've got John Doe from Seven.
Ooh. Okay, well, we're talking about Seven. Yeah.
So this is, I think, because it was, this killer, brazen.
Yeah.
Like, fearless, super creative, always a step ahead of Somerset and Mills, right? Mm-hmm. So, and you love watching... you know, Brad Pitt kind of go through his gyrations,
yeah.
You know, and trying to figure out, just getting. It's like we just gotta get one step ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right? And then, the Kevin Spacey now appropriately creepy for the role. Always managing
for all the wrong reasons.
Yep.
Come on now.
So.
But would you consider? Would you actually consider Seven to be a horror movie?
I think so.
Yeah,
I think. I think
it straddles the line.
I think it's this.
Or you think? I think it crosses the line.
It's definitely a horror thriller.
Sure.
To be sure.
You don't think it's a thriller horror?
Maybe.
I've always thought the emphasis was on the thriller part, not the horror part.
I think the visceral goriness and the creativeness. I mean, what separates this guy from Tony Perkins, right?
Sure.
I mean, it's like he's just sneaking up and stabbing somebody.
Right.
This guy has choreographing it in these elaborate Seven Deadly Sins ways of handling it. So like the, greed, a pound of flesh, having to cut a chunk of flesh out of your body, cut a pound out. It's like that was, a lot of this stuff was just left to your mind when they describe it. It's like lust.
Yeah. Although they do show some of it.
They show some of it like the gluttony where the guy's keeled over face first on his table in a face full of baked beans.
Right.
And they stuffed him full like a goose that they're trying to get foie gras out of, and they kick him.
A turducken.
Or he kicks him. Yeah, a turducken.
It's like he was a turducken.
You don't want anything that's on the inside of that turducken. It's like, ooh, that was nasty. That was like one of those things where it's, yeah, that's a yeah. That was
no, just, I agree. So, yeah. I was pretty spooked by the movie. We should have put this on. What was that episode 3? Horror or not horror? Yeah,
I think I did. I asked horror or not horror.
What did I say?
You said yes.
Oh well, there you go. Okay, I'm already contradicting myself again. Yeah. God, yeah. Old age. Yeah, but stop doing that to me.
Oh my feeble mind! I've seen too many horror movies.
All right. So Seven is yes.
Yeah, but John Doe again. Creative, smart, always ahead of the sleuths. Horror thriller.
Yeah,
you're number four.
My number four is the truck in the 1971 movie The Duel.
Oh,
featuring Dennis Weaver. This is Steven Spielberg's second film involving a terrified motorist driving a Plymouth Valiant who is stalked upon a remote and lonely California canyon roads by an unseen, mostly unseen, driver of an unkempt 1955 Peterbilt 281 tanker truck.
And everybody's had this situation, right? Where there is some asshole who's on your tail.
You give him the finger and then you go, I should not have done that. This is a great film. It's one of my favorite Steven Spielberg films. He was the director, producer. I think he wrote the screenplay, although it was adapted from a Richard Matheson book that was originally published in Playboy magazine, interestingly. And Matheson got the inspiration for this when he was, the same thing happened to him. He was heading home after a golf match, the same day as the Kennedy assassination, and he was basically stalked by a truck, and he had this idea for writing the story, and he pitched it for years. So it was obviously 1963, because that was in Kennedy assassination. And he pitched it for years and years and years and years, and nobody
picked up 10 years later.
Yeah. Nobody would bite on it until not quite 10 years, but yeah, 1971. And it was originally released as a television film. It was probably, I don't know.
So what was Spielberg's first film?
I
thought this was his first.
Well, maybe it was his first. It eventually did become a full length theatrical film. Mm-hmm. It's just a great film because so often, I mean, as we've alluded to both in this podcast and others, sometimes the scariest stuff is not being able to actually see what is in front of you or what is pursuing you. And this is definitely that case. You don't know what this person's motivations are. You don't know where they came from. You don't know what their origin story is. You don't know why they're doing this. And they are just relentless. And Dennis Weaver tries everything. And you slowly start to see his kind of mind unravel in the course of the film. Although he keeps his cool. But yeah, it's just a great film. It does have a super super duper cool climax, where, I mean, by today's standards, if the Duel was made in 2018, there would be an immediate sequel,
right?
Because the truck driver would get out of the truck and then he would continue to haunt other people. But in this
get back in a Mini Cooper and start chasing people around.
They leave it alone. It's very smartly. They leave it alone. Yeah. They leave it dead.
I think that it actually follows one of your strong qualifiers for enjoying a movie. Is like, can you place yourself in this in the seat of the car?
Yes. Can you place yourself in the seat of the car? Yeah. And ultimately, you know, the thing that's funny about this is that ultimately, I'd have to think here for a quick second, but I don't think this killer actually killed.
Oh, Mike. So this is
zero kill count.
This is our top 10 threateners.
It's like zero kill count.
Oh.
All right. Okay. So what do you got for your number three on the fearsome foursome list?
So this is following up on the notion that I wanted to go something that's more than just an unstoppable force.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picking interesting characters.
Right.
I think one of the this one I'll say, because it's heavily franchised.
Yeah.
I think
Deadly Night Part 4.
This is I'm going Saw.
Yeah.
And Jigsaw.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think because this is a clever, you know, a tricks and traps guy. And I think as this is a case in a similar way that like Friday the 13th, where all of a sudden you reveal who the killer is late in the movie, and then it becomes so successful. And the tropes of this trap master become so interesting that they got to keep him through. And so what are they on the fifth one?
Right.
Just kidding.
Fifth. They're like ninth or something.
Really? Oh, geez.
Too many.
I will admit, I haven't seen.
I was just going to. That is the quintessential question. How many?
I've seen three of them.
Okay.
Okay.
One, two, three?
I missed.
One, four, seven?
No, I saw the 3D one.
1, 12, 16.
They all blend together. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But I think the thing that I like is that he sets these lose-lose propositions, right?
Right.
And he's playing off of, and it's always, he's a manipulator.
Yeah.
As much as he is a straight-up killer.
Sure.
And these traps are just, they're horrific. It's like, I got a couple of power drills pointed to my head. I got my head strapped to a thing that's going to tear my jaw off. I'm going to give you, that's the old Road Warrior trick where it's like, I'll give you, you've got a hacksaw that's not sharp enough to cut the handcuffs off so you can cut your ankle off.
Right.
You know, right? And it's that was, I think, first played to great effect in Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you can cut through the chain in 5 minutes. Car's going to blow up in 2 minutes. You can use this to cut your hand off. So,
right.
Boom. So, but this, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Because the other thing is that this is all of my characters who I'm picking, you'll see a trend, is that they will toy with their prey.
And there's a complexity to
it. Yeah, so there's a character behind this. And I think this is where I really struggled with, like,
I think I'm going the exact opposite.
Yeah, well, that truck doesn't do much talking, that's for sure. You know, the...
Boom!
The, like, Jason Voorhees, don't say anything. And he's, you know, there's a... You know, he'll lift you up and run a pitchfork through your gut. And then, you know, and string you up, but Jigsaw's a manipulator, and I think that's what I find fascinating.
Okay, all right, I like it.
Okay.
I like it. My number, what are we at here? Number seven.
You're number three.
Number three. This is a film called Deep Red. This is a 1975 film, also called Profondo Rosso, also called The Hatchet Murders. This is an Italian giallo film by the Dario Argento. It was released in 1975. I think I already said that. Mm-hmm. It involves a medium psychic and a pianist who investigates a series of murders performed by a mysterious figure wearing black leather gloves.
So to be clear, this character actually does kill.
This character does kill and kills lots.
Okay.
Kills lots. The interesting little footnote here is that apparently Argento was so fond of the name Profondo Rosso, Deep Red, he opened up a movie memorabilia store in Rome called Profondo Rosso.
Nice.
Who knew? Who knew? So it's a great it's got of all the giallo films, this is the most giallo. It's got vibrant colors, it's got weird angles. It's got lots of...
Does blood run over the lens?
It's got blood running over the lens. It's got super cool, like, rock and roll soundtrack noise provided by...
The Goblin.
Maybe one of... I would argue... Some would disagree. I would argue maybe the greatest horror soundtrack creators of all time. They did Dawn of the Dead. They did Suspiria. They've done all sorts of stuff. Goblin did this one as well. It really sets the tone. What's great about this is that it is sort of a wonderful kind of bait and switch film where you think that they have the killer, but in fact it is the killer's mother, and it's disclosed that it's ultimately disclosed that, you know, the kid witnesses his mom stabbing the husband to death because the husband is trying to commit her to an insane asylum.
Crazy.
Which you would think would drive the kid crazy. Makes sense. Turns out the kid is not the killer. The mom is the killer.
It's Friday the 13th.
It is kind of. And it predates Friday the 13th by 6 years. 6 years. It's got an insane... scene at the end where the mom confronts the pianist who I mentioned earlier with this hatchet. She's running down the hall. Her head gets lopped off, and he ends up staring into this giant pool of blood. It's just like, in terms of a horror film, it hits all the right notes. It's super scary. She's a very scary killer. There's a ton of misdirection. There's a ton of smoke and mirrors. There's a ton of giallo. There's lots of great visuals. There's lots of great color. There's lots of great soundtrack. So Deep Red is right on the money.
Profondo Rosso.
And Martha, I didn't even name the killer. The killer is named Martha. Martha. Profondo Rosso. Go see Deep Red. So what is your number two the best killers, favorite killers,
so
scariest killers?
I couldn't resist... So this is not my habit to pick a franchisee kind of a character, but I couldn't resist Freddy Krueger.
Oh yeah.
I felt obliged tough. to pick tough. One of the big four.
It's tough to avoid that.
So, you know, if you get the big four, I think the big four are Jason, Freddy, Michael, and Leatherface, right? The ones who just get
Chucky. No Chucky. Chucky gets no love.
No, I don't Chucky elevate Chucky to the same, not to the same level. Although Jigsaw might be up there now as well.
Yeah.
But I do this because I love Robert Englund.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he's become the face of horror movies, an ambassador for scary stuff. I had a lot of fun actually going back, and I went back explicitly to watch his bad puns.
Uh-huh.
Right. And the kind of crazy stuff that they would do with this guy to make him, it's like the fact that he'd just go up and he'd cut off his own fingers and he'd squirt blood and his fingers would turn into needles. And so, you know, I got a list of them.
Of your faves.
Yeah. Of the favorite quotes.
No, not favorite quotes. Favorite of the Freddy Krueger films.
Oh, the Dream Warriors.
Oh, that's your favorite.
Yeah.
Okay.
No doubt. That's my favorite.
There you go.
Although one is a great one. I think one was this was a tremendously scary one, particularly when he drags, this is the two scenes, one where he drags Johnny Depp into the bed and the geyser of blood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there was the girl who gets cut up and he's tearing her apart and she's rolling on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that he's got these great lines. I mean, it's like
best quotes.
I'm your new boyfriend now, Nancy. Okay, so that, and he always ends up with he does the cackle. He goes, "How's this for a wet dream, Joey?" Drags Joey into the waterbed. and then told you comic books were bad for you. And the kid like turns into a comic book and he goes, ah, and he starts cutting him up like he's shredding lettuce. One of the favorite lines. Welcome to prime time, bitch. He grabs the girl, jams the girl's head in the television set. And then Freddy versus Jason.
Right.
Time to put this bad dog to bed. he doesn't cackle that one. He plays it straight up because, you know, he's not going to cackle Jason. You might get, you know, it's a mano-y-mano thing. There's one, which is another one where there's the girl's pumping iron. And he comes up and he pushes down on the barbells and her elbows blow out and he goes, no pain, no gain. and one that I actually, because I will admit, this is, you know, how many of the Friday the 13th have I seen? I probably stopped at 5.
Yeah.
I did New Nightmare, which was actually really good.
I think I stopped at 5 too.
I actually didn't even see Freddy vs. Jason.
I do remember seeing the first one in the theater and being really terrified.
No, it was
it was like in high school with some friends, went and saw it, and I said, this is legitimately scary.
It was legitimately scary, and I think not just
for the time. And
no, it's still I think they played it more straight up.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I think a lot of these franchisey ones get goofier as you continue on,
right?
You
know? And it's a pretty dark story because you
can't get away from them, and it's like as soon as you close your eyes. And
well, no, not that, but the sort of the origin story about like sort of this Boo Radley type suspected pedophile who the neighborhood, the community, the parents of the school decide to set this poor guy on fire.
Yeah, watch this happen to me, Nasser, right?
Right.
Like, you've been fondling gymnasts, we're going to light you on fire! And then he's going to come back as this vengeful podiatrist.
So, all right.
No, pediatrician. Podiatrist, yes. That's foot doctor.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So that was... So Freddy, I mean, that's...
Freddy's solid.
I had to.
Freddy is solid.
Yep. You're number two.
My number two is Frank Zito. As Maniac. This is the 1980 slasher film directed by William Lustig. It stars Joe Spinell as Frank Zito. He's a serial killer in New York City who murders and then scalps the young ladies. This film also features the Tom Savini, who plays kind of a critical role in the film. It came out in 1980, was originally considered to be a just straight up exploitation film.
It's a video nasty. I mean, it is
super video nasty, super, super video nasty. No question about it. The foundation of the film involves, as I said, Frank Zito, the killer who was abused as a child by his prostitute mother, and then he becomes a serial killer who, guess who he murders? Young women! And he scalps them and attaches their hair to mannequins. It's super gross, super dark. It's got that early 1980s New York grit and dirt and stank to it.
There's a... There's a more recent movie that's come out that sort of reminded me, I guess, something, Midnight Meat Train.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about that?
Yeah.
And it's another, it's like a real big, bulky serial killer in New York City and just over-the-top kills and that kind of stuff. It's like, this is kind of like Maniac.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it probably is. It probably is. Maniac is really good. It, again, has got a great final sequence. Part of the, I think, brilliance of the Frank Zito character, the Maniac character, is they actually let you into his head a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of verbalizes a lot of, in a bit of exposition throughout the film, he sort of verbalizes kind of what he's thinking and sort of what's going on in his head. And there's some really kind of hallucinatory sequences towards the end of the film. And it's got a great jump scare. An actual jump scare, if a real jump scare at the end of the film. It is good. If nothing else, he is truly a film killer. But most importantly, I think what it does is it really captured this great snapshot in time, you know, early 1980s, New York City, just dirt, grit, and just foul behavior.
This one, and I think this one never spawned sequels in the same way.
No.
And I think it is a... It's a much harder movie
than
Halloween and
Friday the 13th.
It's dark and it's mean.
Yeah, nothing
it's akin to maybe not as exploitive as I Spit on Your Grave, but it fit into this a lot of
it's in the I Spit on Your Grave neighborhood.
Yeah, because it's
down the block.
Kinds of things like the Tom Savini.
It's at the end of the stops. It's at the end of the street on the left
on the last house. On the right. One on the left, you don't want to go to either. You don't want to go to the house on the right either. So,
all right. So what do you got?
Top one, recent pick.
Yes.
Pennywise.
Ooh, there you go. He's a good killer.
He's wonderful.
He kills.
He's one weird, freaky monster clown thing. And the
are you going 1989 Pennywise?
No. I say
2017.
Skarsgård is better than Curry.
There you go.
Saying it.
All
right. Right now, planting my flag.
All
right. That is because the scenes where the classic scene where he seduces Georgie to come get the boat.
Right.
Oh, Georgie. You know, it's like, and you know, both, you know, Skarsgård had to really live up to a legend with Curry's performance.
Yeah.
But the fact that Skarsgård could let his eye go, he has a lazy eye that he has under control, and if he just lets it go, his eye just wanders.
Yeah.
And you look at him, and it's just, he's totally freaky. And then he go from this kind of semi benign clown to freak show,
mm-hmm.
and the sequence where he descends upon the kids and his claws come out, and it was like badass monster,
very maniacal
clown,
very maniacal.
and you know, combination of the again the seductive kind of and yet creepy. Like when they show him in like stop motion footage, and he's slowly advancing on you, and you just it's like you,
the, oh with the slide projector, yeah, right, that's a great scene. So did you read the book though? Did you read?
I hadn't. Yeah. I'll be honest. So I know of him through both the miniseries,
right,
and last year's movie. But I just found that his legend of who he was, mm-hmm. was compelling. I thought the execution. And I think actually I will say, you know, despite my putting my flag in the ground, I think that Tim Curry put Pennywise on the map as one of the all-time great villainous killer monster things.
Yeah.
And Skarsgård delivered in his role. We'll see what happens when they come out the next episode when they bring the adults out. But
mm-hmm.
you know, when he's Just his mere presence and the acting ability that it required to pull that off, more than most any other, like the guys who played like Kane Hodder, who's like Jason, he just needed to be big,
right?
Big and physical,
right?
There's no acting behind that mask. There's no acting behind that, and maybe that's, you know, the force, like Michael Myers, mm-hmm. the shape,
yeah.
Right? He's no longer a person. He's behind a mask.
Yeah.
But these other, so the ones who I've picked are also that they're. They chew up the scenery.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I really enjoyed last year's movie, and that elevated Pennywise to the top of my killers list.
That's bold. Given the history, the rich history of killing, stabbing, poking,
right.
chopping,
right.
cutting, that is bold.
Although, you know, I think just watching him tear an arm off a child,
that was pretty gnarly. Yeah. So my number one, it was super duper hard. I had Billy from Black Christmas, who is awesome because he's this nameless sort of point of view killer who you mm-hmm. never actually see. I had Cujo, who go rewatch Cujo. Yeah. Cujo is good. The trailer for Cujo, so freaky, mm-hmm. so scary, mm-hmm. such a great story. I mean, speaking of Stephen King, mm-hmm. Leatherface. It was, oh man, I was like, got it. Like, how do you leave Leatherface off the list? I went obvious, I did go with Michael Myers because just because I think in terms of killers, you'll find no greater sort of popular culture representation than Michael Myers. He just really is great. I mean, you know, this this involves it was John Carpenter and I can't remember the other person that Deborah Hill, who had worked together to create the sort of the shape, Michael Myers, the killer, the boy. But it basically involves it happens in 1963 in Haddonfield, Illinois. Michael Myers murders his sister in this fictional town, and then he returns home 30 years later, 20 years later, in 1978. That's not 20 years later.
But they did do H20,
yes,
which looked like H2O.
That's right.
20 years later.
Yeah. Anyway, everyone has seen Michael Myers. Everyone has seen Halloween. Well, if you haven't seen Halloween, you should see it. Halloween was produced, like getting to our earlier discussion or earlier podcast discussions, it was produced for a budget of $300,000. It grossed $47 million at the box office. It became one of the most profitable independent films of all time. And it has spawned tons of Halloween movies, coming up in 2018, you will see the return of Halloween. Jamie Lee Curtis reprises her role.
She still looks awesome.
She does. She looks great. She is in the new Halloween film. It looks great. The only Halloween, out of all the Halloween movies, the only Halloween movie that did not include Jason was Halloween 3. I know there's a whole backstory behind that. Inexplicably, it had something to do with, like, some evil costume maker who had decided to hoist all sorts of cursed masks on children so that they would be, you know, further cursed. It doesn't make a damn bit of sense. But Michael Myers did play a role in all of the other films. I am going to discount the Michael Myers Rob Zombie films because they're just not good. And, in fact, the first Halloween remake that Rob Zombie did, I had a lot of hope for. It's got Ken Foree. He really, I mean, Rob Zombie, that was a Freudian slip. Rob Zombie really did everything he could to pull in tons of great 60s, 70s horror B-movie actors into Halloween. I mean, he really was trying to pay.
No doubt that Rob Zombie loves the genre. But he just doesn't know how to. He can't execute.
No, and the thing that was so great about the very first Halloween movie in 1978 was that there wasn't this droning exposition explaining the backstory behind Michael Myers. Whereas the Rob Zombie film, it's like that's all it did. It was just this massive rumination on who Michael Myers was and why he got this way and how he got this way.
The whole idea was that Michael Myers is a killing force of nature.
Right. And that's all you need to know.
For the upcoming Halloween reboot with Jamie Lee Curtis, one of the other fun things is the guy who was the first man in the mask, Nick Castle, he's 70 years old. He's going to be in the movie too.
Yes,
and he's been. If you go to our website, there's an Instagram clip of Nick Castle on a treadmill trying to show the producers, I can still do it. I can.
I got my chops.
Although I think
chop.
I think Jamie chop, Lee chop. can just scoot a little bit faster than the old man. It's like if Michael Myers is a 70-year-old dude, it's not going to be too scary.
All right. Well, that's a good list. I like it. I think there was a lot of interesting stuff.
No overlap this time.
And there was no overlap, which with killers you would think.
I was surprised that, you know, because the chance of you running Freddy out there.
There's got to be a Freddy. There's got to be a Chucky. There's got to be a Leatherface. There's got to be a Michael Myers.
Right.
On some list. Yes. Some list somehow, because they are the stalwarts, the columns. They are the foundation of horror movie
slasher killers
royalty. All right, so Eric, let's get to that part of the evening where we cover our
undead.
So what film should folks not go see this week?
Okay, so my dead movie this time out And these themes, you may hear these kinds of things every now and again, but I blame Mike.
Yes.
For a movie, we're staying in the slasher genre.
Yeah.
We snagged Visiting Hours.
Yeah.
1982.
Michael Ironside.
Come
on.
Should have been a great villain. Should have been.
Should have, could have, would have.
He looks creepy. He acts creepy.
William Shatner.
Shatner, named on the box, really shows up for like
the Kirk.
He's in there for 5 minutes at the beginning and 5 minutes in the end, and he picked up a royalty check.
Yes.
By 1980, left
all the way to the bank.
Yeah. By 1982, he was an established. You know, it's like we knew what we were. It's like you wanted the. Oh no. What have you done? But we didn't get anything. We didn't get anything out of Shatner. This was a movie that showcased people acting totally irrationally and idiotically. Under, you know, when the story is that there's a news anchor and she gets attacked. She gets attacked by a psycho with a knife.
Michael Ironside,
and who's stalking her, and she manages to get away in time to get sent to the hospital where she's treated for her wounds, and Michael Ironside continues to pursue her to the hospital and manages to slay a number of the patients who are nearby despite an ever growing cop presence. And then the cops
in the hospital,
but they don't shut the hospital down. It doesn't turn into a crime scene. They just move the patients around. It's so dumb. It was super dumb.
Great movie poster. Great trailer.
Yeah. Dumb.
Two redeeming qualities.
Ooh, man.
Lots of stinky qualities.
Lots of overacting.
Yes. And not on the part of Shatner.
Shatner. He wasn't in the movie long enough to be credited with lots of bad acting.
No.
Mike, what you got? What's a movie that you wouldn't recommend?
So I'm gonna mix up my dead undead this week.
Oh.
This is a twofer.
Okay.
This is the movie you should not see. And the movie you should see all at once. And it involves a killer named Krug Stylo. This is The Last House on the Left.
Oh my.
1973.
Whoa. Video Nasty Primo.
This is the grandfather of all the Video Nasty.
Wes Craven original.
In fact, I almost put Krug Stylo. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. He's sort of the main killer in the film. This film is, it's worth seeing. But it's also so horrifying and so terrible that you will absolutely take a shower after you watch this film.
This is one of those movies that makes you feel bad watching.
Super gross out. It basically involves two teens headed to a rock and roll concert. And on the way to the rock and roll concert, what do? They try to score some weed.
Yep.
Strike two. they are then brutalized by a group of psychotic convicts. And I found out that in doing my research for this film, the alternate title for Last House on the Left was Sex Crime of the Century.
Yeah, there you go. No.
Because it's just.
That would have been very on the nose.
Yes. It's so gross. It involves actually a pre-Lorena Bobbitt penis nibbling, biting off of scene. It involves, at the end, an induced suicide where Krug convinces a guy to kill himself. It involves a knife or a throat slashing by knife at the end of the film while they're falling into the pool. I mean, there's so much horrifying, awful, evil stuff in this film, but it's worth watching. And
it's
Wes Craven. It is Wes Craven.
Roger Ebert recommended this movie, but it comes with super strong caveats.
Right.
This is not a gateway horror movie. This is a horror movie for the aficionados who can handle anything, and even then, it's
questionable
as to whether people
morally you should be handling. Yeah,
it puts a lot of bad seeds in the because it's handled very straight up. I think the only movie that might push this one harder
would be I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah. Although they're definitely in the
they're,
same
they're the same neighborhood.
Same neighborhood, like, that's, same block.
That's it's like the house, the last house on the left, the last house on the right is Maniac's house, and the one at the end of the street is
this is a gritty film. But yeah, so I recommend that you see it. I recommend that you stay away from it.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant way of describing it because it is actually a good. I would actually throw Cannibal Ferox in the same mix.
Sure,
it is a. You kind of got to see it to believe it.
Yep.
The stink will stay with you. But you can't unsee it. But it's actually not a bad production. And it's actually a powerful, powerful, horrifying movie.
Yeah. True indeed.
Okay,
true
so indeed. My undead movie, the movie that I am recommending for episode 9.
Yes.
Staying in the slasher genre.
Slasher killer.
And I was tempted actually to make this guy my... to put him on the list, but this is Behind the Mask: The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Oh yeah, that was good.
And this is shot in Portland.
Yeah, I know.
And in fact, I think that what's now I think Lardo's.
Yeah,
and don't let that name fool you, folks. Lardo's is actually a pretty tasty restaurant.
Yes,
used to be a Cadillac diner or some little burger joint. Yeah, on
this is like a pancake house. This is like a breakfast place. Yeah,
And so there's like I know that place. And it's like hey, it's the Portland Public Library. Yeah. So I mean, there's that going for it. But actually, the story it's a documentary style film where a documentary team gets a one-on-one interview with a series. Serial killer, and they want to find out what makes him tick. They want to follow him around and shows them the tricks of the trade and how he does things and how he sets up his prey. And so it's a little bit fourth wall in that way. Mm-hmm. I think it's I think there's some tongue in cheek satire there. There's definite homages to all the great slasher movies of yore, and then of course they can't help but this thing does devolve into Leslie Vernon turning on the film crew.
Right.
But
it's a quality little indie film.
Yeah, and I think
you can tell like when you're watching it lacks Hollywood production value.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it's not earnest and does not have heart.
Yeah.
Because it does.
Yeah. And it's you know, I think it also understands the tropes and exploits them, and so you know, this is where I wait because this is where I do the false scare and set it up for the real thing, and then I stick them in the knife in the face of the knife, you know, that kind of a thing.
It's a good movie. There's some bits that are a little cliched, but that I think in all it is a solid film.
Right.
Solid film. All right, well, that wraps up episode number 9. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to go over to the Scariest Things podcast website at www.scariestthings.com. One T, Scariest Things. And before we go, don't go see Last House on the Left, because that is stink that you will never get off you.
And at the same time, go see it.
But see it, too. Be sure to see it.